Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Guys, we are shadow running the free world here. Let's try to take this job seriously.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 378 for the week of October 25th, 2021. I am 86-year-old king of rock and roll, David T. Cole, and I'm here with liver farmer Tara Ariano,
the real Miracle-Gro,
and reptoid Judge Judy, John Ramos.
Rip her arms off and call it even.
Welcome to Extra Hot Grape for another week. Before we get into it, we apologize for having ducked out last week. We were dealing with some life stuff, and some of that is still ongoing. Sarah is not joining us for that reason. She had a loss in the family. So please send your good thoughts and love to Sarah, and we will have her back as soon as we can. But joining us today, we have John Ramos. He hasn't been here since we talked about Space Force last year. Spoiler, wow. We probably owe him another apology. Hi, John.
Hi, guys.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I did it. So we are here with John to talk about Inside Job on Netflix. You know how some people are convinced that particular celebrities are clones, media is crammed full of hidden messages, and the government is run by lizard people? The premise of Inside Job is that all of that, plus every other conspiracy theory you've ever heard, is true. Reagan Ridley, voice of Lizzie Kaplan, works at Cognito Inc., a company which her father co-founded that is actually an extremely secret agency controlled by a board of shadowy figures. She's pretty sure she's about to get a huge promotion and start running the place, but its other co-founder, JR, Andy Daly, is concerned that Reagan lacks the people skills to be effective. So with that in mind, he's brought in Brett Clark Duke, an extremely unremarkable yet friendly and non-threatening white man, essentially to handle all of Reagan's personal interactions, just in time to sideline her as she's about to unveil her robotic president, Robotus, voice of Chris Diamantopoulos. Other voice actors include Christian Slater as Reagan's father, Rand, Tisha Campbell, Brett Gelman, Bobby Lee, and John DiMaggio from Futurama. IMDb says it was co-created by Alex Hirsch of Gravity Hall's fame and Shion Takuchi, but only the latter is credited on the actual episodes that we watched. 10 episodes dropped on Netflix last Friday. We may talk about events from any of those, but we also may only talk about the first couple. Who's to say? Let us do the Chen check-in. John, should our listeners watch Inside Job?
I'm going to say no.
Dave.
Woof, this is bleak.
Yeah, I agree. It's not great. So, John, let us start with that apology, because we are very sorry to have you back to talk about another extremely subpar piece of Netflix sci-fi / comedy content.
Hey, with the money they're spending, how did we know, right?
Yeah, like this idea in the right hands might have potential. Where do you think it went wrong, John? Why did this not work?
Watching the first couple of episodes just invited extremely unfavorable comparisons to other shows.
Yeah.
When they tried to do comedy involving the workplace of an evil organization, I was like, why am I not watching Better Off Ted?
Yeah. Right? Yep.
And when they went for the absurdism made possible by the animated format, I wanted to be watching Frisky Dingo. And when they did an episode with JFK clones, I wanted to be watching the IRA much better clone high.
Of course. Yeah.
But I think on a more macro level, to me, the first two episodes were trying to meld this really high concept with really broad comedy.
Yeah.
And it just did not work at all. It felt extremely lazy. Like, an example would be, like, they use the word sheeple, and then there's, mm-hmm. like, a hybrid sheep and human on the screen, and that's the joke?
Yeah.
I mean, if you know what sheeple are, that's not funny. And if you don't, you don't get it. So what's happening here?
It's a premise that invites a Rick and Morty team to create it. And I'm not really big on Rick and Morty, but I can recognize this subject matter lends itself well to that absurdism and that sort of attention to detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas they are giving Family Guy sort of joke structure and plot structure and development, whether that be characters or storyline or whatever.
Yeah.
And it really made me, like, to echo as John's saying, like, another show that I thought after I watched it, I had a greater appreciation for the writing on it was like Futurama. It actually combines a lot of elements that are going on in this show, effortless compared to this show, which smacks of effort and sort of you can see the doubt in the jokes as they come out sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I'm really surprised.
Yeah, very networky, it felt like.
I was really surprised to see it had the hands of a Gravity Falls creator in it, because that was really smart and it skewed younger, but it was also very smart. And this show doesn't show any of those characteristics. It is very kind of one note and also confused in exactly what it's doing. Like, one of the characters we first see in that his Reagan's forced partner is nepotism, frat nepotism character. I don't know whether he's supposed to be a fratty dick or like a nervous Nelly. Like, the characterization of that is so like diametrically opposed, and they never blend it at the same time. Like, it's a very weird sort of unblended, you know, first 10 minutes of a stew sort of show to me.
Yeah. Diet Rick and Morty is what I said when we watched it last night too. Like, Rick and Morty is, I think we established.
We have Rick and Morty at home.
Yes.
At home.
I think we've established on this podcast that show is not for me, but I get why people like it, and it goes all the way for its premise, whereas this feels like it's pulling its punches, or it has no punches to pull. Like, even the actual conspiracies that they show are so, like, entry-level conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I'm extremely online anymore, but even, like, just the ones that have crossed my consciousness from being on Twitter, like, are more outre than these. Like, any real conspiracy theorist would be like, these are the ones the dumb people believe. You know what I mean? Like, how do you do
early Fox Mulder level conspiracy?
Yeah. How do you do a JFK bit, which they do in episode 2, and not reference the Q theory that JFK Jr. is still alive? Like,
seriously.
Honestly.
Yeah, the Rick and Morty thing also, I thought that too. And part of it was just because, like, the very first scene, the way Christian Slater is playing, it seems like he's going for Rick, basically.
Yeah.
I will say, you know, in the interest of not completism, but just, again, giving a show a chance, I actually watched 4 episodes.
Whoa.
And he has nothing to do in the entire time.
That sucks.
Nothing.
Because he's one of the better voice performances, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's
he's
going for it.
He's got this manically yelly energy that's kind of fun from him, for sure, but it just doesn't go anywhere that I see. I mean, to me, like, this whole show is taking a really long way around to get to the Simpsons Stonecutter song, basically. And if it's not funny along the way, like, what are we doing here, basically? You know. I will say episode 3 was a little bit better for me. It seemed like it had a little bit more confidence to be weirder and telling, like, things on a little bit smaller a scale, but it's certainly not enough for me to keep watching at this point.
Yeah.
Also, I think at this moment in our history, I don't really want to hear about crazy conspiracy theories.
Well,
not that they're traveling, they're trucking in QAnon stuff necessarily, but I just feel like the appetite for crazy dumb people saying crazy dumb things at this moment in time is a little bit lower than it would be, say, when we were watching X-Files back in the day. So it has that going against it too, where I'm just like, I think I'm at the point now where I just kind of want to take a step back from crazy shit in general, like real world crazy shit, dealing with people that just are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't help this show. On top of that, once every, like, 3 years, that really old pitch I had for, like, Smoking Man Runs the Universe show pops up. And it's obviously not, like, a very unique idea, because it's been done a few times. Miracle Workers, Stee had a pilot or something like that a little while ago that was kind of the similar idea. But, like, you got to do something more with it now.
But I think your point about, you know, zeitgeist is valid too, right? I mean, where we as a society have learned that laughing at these kind of conspiracy theorists doesn't work.
No. Nope. You
know, like, that was the wisdom probably 20 years ago, but not now. We need to we need to step up our game here if we're going to make fun of this kind of thing, basically.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could, the argument of like, is it irresponsible for Netflix to make the show kind of like overstates the importance of the finished product, which is
right.
like not good or memorable.
Yeah, you have to be good to even earn that conversation.
Exactly. Like this show just is not going to have any kind of cultural impact at all. So I don't think that we need to worry about people watching it and being like, this totally confirms everything I thought forever. You know.
Right.
It's time for Around the Dial, talking about shows we're watching when we're not watching Inside Job. Tara, you're first.
Well, both of these are a tiny bit stale dated because they're from the week before last, but sure. I didn't get to do them because we weren't on last week and they're related to my biggest plug. So here we go. Succession! Season 3, your favorite rich pigs, the Roys, are back on HBO Sunday nights. Back when they announced that they were going to start filming this season in November, I thought for sure it wasn't going to happen. And I'm pretty sure I said that on this podcast because the way the show is requires being on the streets of New York with lots of extras around and so forth. The first couple of episodes got around this very cleverly by having just a couple of storylines of like smaller groups of people by themselves and created story that isolated them, people in a car, people in hotels, in airport lounges, and so on. The best thing about the premiere was Kendall finding new and ever more horrifying levels of cringe. And I can tell you, having watched through episode 3 at this point, it only gets cringier. Holy shit. What a vanity-free performance by Jeremy Strong and making Kendall like, oh, just exhausting in his terribleness.
Yeah. It's like when Liz Lemon is trying to sign the book agent and the guy's on his photos. They're like, Rahm Emanuel's inviting me to go to Deer Valley. I am crushing it.
Like, kind of like that, but even like more removed from what is happening in their lives right now. Yeah.
Yes. If you thought L to the OG from season 2 was like the nadir of where Kendall could go, that is quite bad, but worse stuff is yet to come. It was just renewed for season 4 in the hour before we started taping today. So congratulations to Succession on a rocket ship to the moon. So the show's still great. I've already talked about it a lot in other places. We'll continue to do so over the season. Hang in for plugs. Also back for season 3 the week before last, You on Netflix. Two of TV's blackest comedies returning in the same weekend was really an embarrassment of riches. So season 2 showed us Joe Penbagley moving from the wreckage that he had left in New York to Los Angeles, meeting a new object of obsession whose name is Love. She had a twin brother named 40. Love, 40, get it. Over the course of the season, Joe discovered she was not exactly what he thought, yada yada. In season 3, they're married and raising a baby in a very safe, boring, fictional suburb in the Bay Area. And what I love about the show is how changing setting each season so far also opens up new elements of culture to satirize. And moving Joe into a neighborhood full of Silicon Valley phonies means extremely different and extremely specific new things for Joe and the audience to mock and judge. Also, parenting a newborn is stressful in the best of times. That is not what Joe and Love are in. I'll leave it at that in order not to spoil it because it's a wild ride. And I would say if you like winky thrillers like The Flight Attendant, give it a shot. And if you're caught up on Succession and You, then I hope you will follow along with me through the seasons because I recap both of them at Decider. I'm also back on the podcast, The Sweet Smell of Succession, with Dave Chen of the Filmcast and of Chen Check-In fame. And I will link all that in the show notes, as well as I was on This Had Oscar Buzz this week with our friend Joe and Chris File, talking about the very bleak, very autumnal Never Let Me Go. So all of that will be linked in the show notes. Plugs concluded.
John, what do you got?
All right. So I was tempted to talk about Insecure because it just premiered its final season on Sunday, but I decided I wanted to do We're Here instead. We're Here, returning for a second season, is a reality show starring three RuPaul's Drag Race alums, Shangela, Yuriko O'Hara, and Bob the Drag Queen. All these queens are from, you know, kind of non-cities in the South, I would say. So they fit really well with the premise, which is they go into a small town, not necessarily the South, but often that's true. And they each have an assignment to be paired with one person who's like either LGBTQIA or some sort of ally to that community. And they basically put on a drag show with all those people performing. The second season premiered last week. Two episodes dropped. The first one had been interrupted mid-production by COVID. So this one is a little bit of an outlier in that it depicts both pre- and post-pandemic. But as part of the standard structure, attention is paid to the queens arriving separately in town, giving their first impressions. They announce their presence by marching through the street in drag. As I said, the premiere is told both in the show's past and present. So we get to see the initial meetings with between the drag mentors and subjects, and also how they're doing after a year plus has passed. So, for example, one thing that happened in this season's premiere that was unique is that one subject who we saw as a gay man in 2020 has now come out as non-binary in 2021. But more generally, the show's formula is you've got your three subjects. They all feel, you know, mostly because of their small town existence, I think they feel uncomfortable in one way or another expressing their authentic selves to the degree that they'd like. So you've got elements of Priscilla to Wong Fu, even the often maligned Drag You. But the result is a really uplifting journey that is not saccharine, is not pretending that this is necessarily going to fix everyone's problems, but at least gives a potential roadmap to some greater joy and self-knowledge for its participants. It's a very enjoyable watch that feels even better coming out of COVID. When you think how isolated the subjects must have been, you know, not with COVID on top of their, you know, already challenging issues, it's great to see the queens back out doing this work that is really putting something good into the world. The first season was 6 episodes, and the second appears to have 8. They're an hour long, but I believe that runtime is earned, and I highly recommend it.
Awesome.
For my plug, I'm going to mention, even though it's not new at this point, a miniseries that I was involved in the production of. That's HBO's Cue Into the Storm. The writer-director, Cullen Hoback, has been my producing partner on a couple projects. And, you know, speaking of conspiracy theories that are actually, you know, still quite timely, it is, I strongly recommend it if you haven't seen it, because it is not going away. Like, I don't know if you've seen that Ron Watkins is running for Congress in Arizona.
Great.
But that is happening. So, you know, get educated on what's going on in Q if you're not.
We will link that in the show notes.
And as always, play bridge.
Yeah.
All right. On the next Extra, Extra Hot Great, dropping this Friday for all our supporters on Patreon, is clothing time. Basically, we're asking about a desert island character wardrobe situation. If you can only have the wardrobe of one character from television and that's it, that's all you get to wear, who would that be?
And John will be joining us for that.
And next week on EHG Prime, Adam Grossworth will join us for the fall forcening subject chosen by our patrons. We gave them the theme fall forcenings and let them decide. And what they decided was, we want the lead topic to be Rosalind falling down the elevator shaft from L.A. Law. And I think that's a great choice. I'm looking forward to one of the most absurd moments in television.
I can still see it clearly in my mind, her turning into the camera and be like,
"Wah!" Yeah. And I had forgotten or never knew that that episode is called Good to the Last Drop. Chef's kiss.
What?
Yeah. It's true.
Dear Mr.
That's Mel Rosian.
There are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate 3. I am not a crackpot.
I am not a crackpot. Your holiday episode must air before the holiday. We all remember the 1990s, when we all still watched and cared about new episodes of The Simpsons. Their annual Treehouse of Horror episodes at that time were a highly anticipated event. And then Fox got the rights to broadcast the baseball playoffs and World Series. And because you never know how many games would be required, it started happening often that these Simpsons Halloween episodes would get pushed into November. The 10th Treehouse of Horror was the first time this happened, November 1st, 2000. The 11th aired November 6th, 2001. The 12th aired November 3rd, 2002, etc. These episodes continued to air in November until the 20th, which aired October 18th, 2009. Then one after that aired November 7th, a full week after Halloween, before someone at Fox got right with God and started scheduling them much earlier in October, with the exception of last year's, which aired on November 1st. But other than that, they've aired as they should, before Halloween. But guess the fuck what? Fox has other shows that want to air Halloween episodes, and baseball is fucking with those now. Last Monday, October 18th, Dave and I watched 9-1-1, as we do every Monday, and at the end of which, there was a tease for an episode full of spooky, horror movie-ish saves. Fun! Then we got to the end and learned that what we'd be seeing was on the show in 2 weeks, November 1st. Where was the Fox scheduler who figured out that Simpson shit when this fucking happened? This does not need to be a problem. We are all familiar with holiday creep. Used to just be when stores would put out their Christmas shit pre-Halloween, but now you get back-to-school ads in July and Valentine's stuff out before New Year's. I know it's annoying that Black Friday has turned into Black Friday week or whatever the fuck. I actually got a mailer for a Black Friday thing last week. But anticipating a holiday is fun, and that can stretch out as far ahead as the celebrants like, in my opinion. So if that Halloween episode of 9-1-1 had aired on October 18th, that would have been fine. You're still within the Halloween season. When a holiday happens, that holiday season is over, and you save that episode for next year. If you're short season, you're doing a winter holiday episode, that should be your season finale. This is also why I don't like New Year's episodes as a rule, unless they're in the middle of a traditional network-length season, because Christmas is your climax. And actually, I don't love them for network shows either, because inevitably your Christmas and New Year's episodes probably end up airing before Christmas, both. And then it's a drag. So I guess my rule is, if your New Year's episode isn't going to air in the hammock week before Christmas and New Year's, you can't do it. Sorry. I am not a crackpot.
Homer, you got to sell your pumpkin futures before Halloween.
I feel like maybe one of the solutions here is to identify major holiday corridors.
Yeah.
And they are absolute. So, like, the Halloween corridor is easy because it's October 1st to October 31st. It's the spooky month, right?
Yes.
And those are the days you're allowed to do pop culture Halloween things. The month of horror on your third tier cable network.
Yes.
Specials for all your favorite network shows. They all go in the Halloween corridor. Yep. And you have your Christmas corridor, you have your Thanksgiving corridor. It's basically just a time before, yep, right? And maybe Christmas is the only one where you can extend it a few days after, because there seems to be, like, you know, those dead days. Like, Christmas quarter can extend to the 29th. I'll be generous and say, like, you know, Hallmark can still go until the 29th. And then the network has to shut down forever.
I don't agree, but...
Okay.
I know. It still feels
like people like Hallmark Christmas movies all year long, or Christmas in July and all the stuff they're doing. Whatever. Yeah, if we can carve out an exception to the for them, you know, we'll go to Congress. We'll get a two-thirds vote for Hallmark. We can do it. But I feel generally you have to have generous but absolute boundaries in order for everybody to be happy here. The powers that be who are trying to make money off the holidays, but also everybody else who's trying to maintain sanity. Mm-hmm. I am also not a crackpot.
Yeah.
I am also looking for solutions. Oh, that backwards canon music can only mean one thing. It is time for the extra hot, great no-knack. It is a bad episode of an otherwise good show, is the metric we are going for. And so we are presented with this argument from Erica.
Hi, extra hot, great. This is Erica, about to tell you why Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Season 6, Episode 12, Casecation, belongs in the no-knack. If you're familiar with the writing of the brilliant internet advice columnist Captain Awkward, you might know the phrase bitch-eating crackers. If you are not, your bitch-eating crackers is a person in your life that you dislike so entirely that everything they do, no matter how trivial, annoys you. As in, to quote the captain's website, look at that bitch-eating crackers like he owns the place. Your Betty's White, or your Chris's D'Elia, if you will. This episode is my bitch-eating crackers. I'll admit that as someone who never wanted kids, this entry is extremely personal, so I realize that I might have a little more skin in the game than your average watcher. The A story angers me so much that jokes I probably would have found at least passably funny in any other episode completely exhaust me or annoy me in this one. Listeners may be asking, what is that A story? It's this. It's Jake and Amy's first anniversary. And this is apparently the first time that it has occurred to either of them that differing opinions exist about having children.
Hey, by the way, we don't have to pretend we're undercover here. The hospital staff knows we're cops.
Oh, I wasn't setting up cover, was I?
Well, just the kids thing, saying that we were going to start trying soon.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean right away. I just meant in the near future.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Except for that there's one little problem there, which is that I don't know that I totally know that I for sure want to have kids. So.
You don't?
No. Do you?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Up front, this episode cannot exist if Amy Santiago is the person she's been written to be. I get it. This does happen in real life. People get married and then discover that they have diametrically opposed wishes regarding kids. But when one of those people is Amy Santiago, this woman has binders for every eventuality, everything she wants laid out in perfect order, each ambition with a plan to go along with it. Do I believe for one single moment that she does not have lists of names, a sex schedule, diagrams of the nursery, a birthing plan, etc., all drawn up already? Do I believe, even fleetingly, that wedding plans with Jake did not involve some sort of, okay, once we've been married for 1 year, we'll start trying for kids, I've got a list of the vitamins we'll both need, and you should try not to jerk off too much? Listener, I believe none of it. But I'm forced to believe it. Because that's what happens.
I don't understand. I thought we were on the same page about kids. We talked about this.
We did?
Oh, look at these pictures my brother sent of Matthew. Mm. We should do this someday. What do you think?
Are you kidding me? Of course. I was talking about going to the water park. You were talking about having kids?
Yeah. I said, do you think we can afford it? And you said, we'll start saving right away.
So let me get this straight. All that water park money I've been saving, you want to spend it on kids now?
Yeah. Why would you want to spend that much money on a water park?
In terms of lampshades, it's like putting a tiddlywink on a searchlight. These two have worked together for minimum 6 years. They dated for 2 and have been married for 1. And in all that time, children were apparently not even mentioned, let alone discussed. It would be one thing if Jake and Amy both wanted kids. I'd accept the tired trope, do a Brenda Walsh full-body eye roll, and move on. I likely still would have stopped watching, but I know enough about Brooklyn Nine-Nine to accept that it would probably find some smart way to avert the tired trope and that people would eventually behave how people should behave. But we're watching a sitcom. Love can't be enough, so main characters get married. And being married can't be enough, so now the couple has to have children. And the woman has to want them. And she has to want them so badly, again, without ever mentioning them once, that she's willing to get a divorce.
Look, can we just press pause on this conversation? I mean, let's enjoy our lives for a little bit, and then maybe the next time it comes up, I'll feel differently, okay?
No.
What?
I need an answer from you now.
Like right this minute?
You could take a day or a week or maybe a month.
That's not a lot of time, Ames. I mean, that doesn't seem totally fair.
Well, now you know how I feel. Women don't have the luxury of waiting till we're 60 and then changing our minds and getting remarried and having a baby with some dumb 28-year-old.
Oh, come on. There's no way I'm going to be rich enough that a 28-year-old is going to want to be with me. Did that help? I don't understand what the big deal is. You're still young. We have plenty of time.
I know, but I don't want to wait around for 2 years and then have you decide you don't want kids because I don't want to start over at 38.
Start over? Like with someone else?
That she will succeed is inevitable. That Jake's concerned are dismissed out of hand is enraging. That he changes his mind within approximately 10 minutes because of the B-plot, Julia Sweeney being willing to blow herself up to protect her grandson, is jaw-dropping. Back to bitch-eating crackers. This episode gets everything wrong. It thinks Casecation is a cute song. It's not. Even Melissa Fumero, who's game for anything, looks embarrassed singing it. It thinks that a nosy old lady is a welcome bit of comic relief. She isn't, even if that nosy old lady is Julia Sweeney. It thinks that lots of people saying long strings of letters and numbers is funny. It's not, even if two of those people are Andre Brower and Mark Evan Jackson. It wraps up this huge issue in 22 minutes because it thinks it has to, because it's a sitcom. It has Jake and Amy talk to the wrong people, by which I mean they each talk to people who agree with them.
Do not do it.
What? Don't you love your girls?
So much. I mean, you should have seen Cagney this morning with the little braids in. But they are a ton of work, man. If you are not totally 100% sure you want them, you won't survive.
Amy should be hearing from Terry that kids will seriously cramp your lifestyle. And Jake should be hearing that kids are cute?
Hey, Look, I don't want you to get caught in the middle of this stuff between me and Jake. I don't want you to choose sides.
Already shows I'm with you.
Really? I didn't know you wanted kids.
I don't know if I'll ever want kids, but you should have them. They're so cute. It's f***ed up.
Oh, it is f***ed up.
That's Rose's two cents anyway, and frankly, you can keep it. In any other episode, women supporting women gets an A+ from me, but this moment went to Rosa because Rosa's a woman and therefore likes kids. Give me Charles waxing rhapsodic about Nicolaj without the tired, joke-like object that Jake doesn't pronounce his name correctly. Hell, I'm not a fan of Gina, but have her tell Jake how cool being a parent is, except by this time in the series, the writers apparently forgot she had a kid. By shrugging off Jake's very real concerns and treating Terry's valid point as a selfish joke, it frames the choice to be a parent as the only correct choice. For a show that tries so often to do things differently and to do them with respect, this approach is not only disappointing, it's basically propagation propaganda. No thanks, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Thanks for your time.
John, you chose this from our list of submissions. Please start us off.
I did. All right. Well, my knowledge of Brooklyn Nine-Nine runs deep. I did two rewatches during the pandemic, and while it's not quite a Golden Girls level of me being able to quote every single line of every episode, it's not that far away either, so I had to see where the submission went. So there's so much with which I could not agree more in Erica's argument here. The setup about, you know, and there's stuff that she didn't even get to, I think, that it's just like, it's not just that the A-plot is so problematic content-wise, it's just really not very funny. The setup about how they haven't gotten to spend time together at the beginning, which is why they're in the hospital, you know, that feels overwritten and clunky and telling the characters information that they already know, which is not usual for this show. I think discerning people can agree that Jake-Amy romance stuff isn't good when the two of them are trying to depict on-screen romantic chemistry, which they're trying to do here. You know, if you were to contrast that with, like, the Bachelor parentheses et episode, you know, which is about their relationship ostensibly, it's really funny, but they're never together in that episode. The couple coming to the rude awakening that they haven't discussed kids is a tired trope at the best of times, but I agree that it's absolutely unbelievable that Amy, who, you know, and it's in my notes, so I'm repeating it, she's probably spent more on binders in her life than most of us spent on food, would not have previously communicated her desire for kids. They try to address this, but it's just not very convincing, much like their on-screen chemistry. And then, you know, the set piece of the debate, which was kind of obliquely referenced. I mean, yeah, it's a little bit funny, the endless stream of it. It's like, you know, when you have a look into a mirror and there's a mirror in the mirrored reflection and you basically are looking into infinity. That's yeah, that was a little bit funny with the debate moderators. Mm-hmm. But you know, while I realize Amy is competitive and tends to resort to such techniques generally, I don't think she would think that this is an effective way to settle such a personal choice, and it feels to me like a rare misjudgment on the show's part of its own characters. You know, her argument that her job will be less time consuming if she gets promoted, I'm not sure how that works. Yeah. You know, when Jake is trying, you know, ultimately, I find Jake to be much more emotionally intelligent in this episode than Amy, which is, you know, that's a swing right there. And then, you know, with this topic, it's just, you know, it just seems so out of character for her. When they finally do get down to the issues, the conversation that ensues feels relatively real, but it does not feel like it should be resolved neatly at the end of the episode at all. You know, the show's sitcom format feels like that eventuality is forced, but that's a reason not to do the episode at all, not to do it this way. Another funny bit, I love Terry's like lamenting how much kids entertainment he has memorized at this point. That feels like a nightmare that would last for years. And then, you know, the Pam stuff, which is kind of, it's kind of tacked on, you know, in terms of the plot. Again, you know, it feels so shortcutty, you know, her reason for doing it, it's just so drastic, and it feels like there could have been a point about like the cost of healthcare in there, but they never make it. Yeah. So it's just not good, in my opinion. So, and, you know, the Cascation song is not great also, I have to admit. Like, it's just a little too far of a stretch for it to, you know, to for it to go smoothly, and it's not for me. So I'm not going to argue against the submission.
I'll go next. You talked about Pam a little bit more than I think Erica did. There's also the fact that, like, the whole Cascation, leaving aside the song, like, the idea of we're going to have a picnic in this coma patient's room. I realize he's a suspect in a crime, but that's gross and tacky. Like, you can't have a charcuterie plate out when a person is receiving medical care. I don't care if he's conscious or not. Yuck. But also, when he's when Jake is trying to talk Pam out of setting off the bomb, you know, I realize he's just saying, whatever, we'll get her to not do it. But he's like, you're going to go to such a fancy prison. Like, she is? You know, like,
what?
Don't.
Yeah.
What? But to address Erica's main point, of course, I am sensitive to the, you know, all TV characters must have children. This is how TV works. Like, this, she's right. This is the escalation of, like, a couple has to get married, and then once they're married, they have to have kids. This is how TV works. And it does happen real, real rarely that, you know, affirmatively choosing not to have children is something that is allowed for a character to do, and it is an issue in a relationship. And usually that does mean that they break up, which, you know, I get it. Like, if one partner wants a kid and the other one doesn't, that's kind of going to be a deal breaker, probably. It's a lot easier to find someone probably that will want to have a kid with you than to convince a child-free person to change their mind, despite what we see in this episode and many other episodes. Like, but when I think about which shows subverted the trope and actually had the woman be the one who didn't want to have kids and it was the reason that a relationship ended, it was The Bold Type, not a great show. And I literally can't think of one other example where it's happened. So, like, Erica is right. This is how TV works. But her more salient point is how preposterous it is that Amy did not make a point in the run-up to their marriage of having the conversation. Like, it's just not as congruent with her character as established.
Yeah, you can't have the realness of this one argument hinge on unbelievable history leading up to it. Like, that's what really sinks that one line, you know, that one question in this episode. It's like, you don't want kids, you want kids. Like, there is no way her being that A-type means that that didn't happen.
Right. Especially given that if it had happened before their marriage, it could have still ended the same way with, like, Jake being convinced because he is clearly not the dom in this relationship. Like, not to put too fine a point on it, but, like, she's obviously the boss of things. And, you know, to Erica's point where it's like, well, it's all resolved in one episode because it's a sitcom and it has to be, like, I would not have wanted this conversation to spread out over multiple episodes either. It's just a matter of, like, when does this happen, before the wedding or after? And the fact that it's happening on their anniversary 1 year later is just not, it's not credible. So I'm not going to be as doctrinaire as Erica is about it as a fellow child-free person. It's like, people have kids and it's fine. Sometimes people do change their mind because it's more important to them to be with their partner than it is to, like, dig their heels in. But the point about Amy not raising it before the wedding is well taken and is really the foundation of this episode and what makes it kind of not credible in the end. Dave.
I think this argument that this episode is no-knack worthy is a better argument for I am not a crackpot. Mm. Where, you know, I'm not a crackpot, but honest conversations with real-world stakes with people that don't necessarily vote down TV party lines is an I am not a crackpot situation, for sure. And we see it in this episode. Maybe I'm just desensitized to it because I've seen it so many times on TV. Like, right. You know what I mean? This is status quo. This is, like, just what happens on TV. I'm not, like, excusing it, but I'm just saying, like, for me, it doesn't really stand out the way I feel like a no-knack should. And I feel like at the core of it, like, this is a more holistic problem. It's better argued on a crackpot basis than perhaps a Brooklyn Nine-Nine basis.
Right.
All right, let's put this to the vote. John Ramos, what say you? No-knack or not no-knack?
Well, Dave, I get what you're saying, but, you know, to me, what makes this show great, you know, at its best is two things: joke density and its ability to stay true to character even while it's being really funny. And this episode fails tremendously on both counts. So for me, I'm going to say yes, it's Nonag.
Yeah, it was not a very funny episode either. You're totally right. Tara.
John said everything I was going to say in almost the same words.
I agree. I'm going to say no, but it's not like I'm not rejecting your argument. I just feel like a no-nack should be even worse than this.
You're just tired. You're just tired.
I'm right behind 50. I'm just like, I haven't had my nap today. I'm just like, I can't deal with it, guys. So, but it doesn't really matter because 2 versus 1 means...
Are y'all ready for Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Season 6, Episode 12, Casecation, terrible title. You're hereby inducted into the extra hot, great, no neck.
We'll get to winners and losers in just a second, but first we want to talk to you about another podcast you may enjoy, because if you loved good TV... and you do. It's why we're all here. There is a new podcast that's probably going to be your jam. Not You, Guillermo, a What We Do in the Shadows podcast presented by The Dip is hosted by comedians Patrick Monahan and Nicole Conlon. I know Patrick from another podcast he hosts, What a Time to Be Alive, the podcast that counts down the things each week that make you say the title of the podcast. Nicole is new to me, but she is also great and does a pretty good Nadja, among other impressions. Every week, they recap an episode of What We Do in the Shadows. Just like us, they have recurring features, like, is Guillermo getting any closer to becoming a vampire? Nicole and Patrick also interview people associated with the show, including pilot Stevedore John Gabris, the vampire's next-door neighbor Anthony Atamanek, and writers Zach Dunn and Jake Bender. If you're not current with What We Do in the Shadows, it's okay. You can always go back and catch up with Patrick and Nicole. Anyone who's into What We Do in the Shadows is going to vibe with Not You, Guillermo, so give it a shot. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Those fucking guys.
That's such a good title, Not You, Guillermo.
It's
I love
very
it.
Good.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for the winner and the loser of the week. I'll take this week's winner. It is Star Wars. Star Wars news coming at you. Here's one for Tara. Last week, again, we're a little bit late with this news, but, you know, good news about
Timothy.
Off with his pants. Good news about Timothy off with his pants is always welcome here at Extra Hot Great. And if you need a pint-sized Timothy Oliphant's ass on your desk, we just want to let you know that you can now get it via the Mandalorian action figure line. Where he played Cobb Vanth. They're finally making an action figure of him. You can take his helmet off. He looks like Timothy Oliphant. If you can't stand all that beauty, you can put the helmet back on for a little while and recharge. Tara, who is this week's loser?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Deborah Messing trying to get attention by wondering why Kim Kardashian was hosting SNL, which happened a couple of weeks ago. Last week, Deborah went on the Tamron Hall show where this came up, and Messing said, I was not intending to troll her on trolling Kardashian, as Jezebel writes. If anyone took it that way, I apologize. She acknowledges that Kim Kardashian is a cultural icon, but, you know, Deborah Messing just loves comedy, and so, you know, it's such a showcase for comedians only, I guess was her idea, and then added, I was just confused. I have been living under a rock. I don't have my finger on the pulse of pop culture. So I was like, okay, has she been doing something on the side that I'm not aware of because I've been so focused on activism? Ugh, fuck off. This is not why you did this. You,
Deborah Messing, you are this decade's Sean Young. Just own up to it and let's just move on.
Did she hashtag her question about Kim Kardashian with resistance?
Ridiculous. Shut up, Deborah, forever. Speaking of being ridiculous, do you know what time it is?
It's a non-regulation game time hosted by Tara Ariano.
That's correct. Because Sarah is not here with us, we are going to do a non-regulation game time written by me, which means Dave gets to play.
Me.
This game is called Tube Tunes, but it's T-O-O-N-S Tunes because, inspired by our lead topic, this is about adult animation shows on television. Did you know that lots of people who are regulars on live-action TV series also like to supplement their income, probably in sweatpants, by voicing characters in cartoons? It's true, and it's what we're talking about today. I'm going to play you a clip. Actually, Dave's going to play it. You tell me the name of the show for 2 points. If you need a hint, I will tell you the name of an actor we just heard and the live-action show where they are a series regular. Then it's worth 1 point. And if you get the cartoon show without a hint, you get Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show style follow-up.
Oh.
Which is, I will ask you to tell me which series regular from show did we just hear in that clip. And if you get it, you get an additional point. It's a non-regulation game time. I will let you guess at every level, but we're not doing Steel Meals or Gross Earth Equalizer Challenge Zones. The usual non-regulation game time stakes are in play. John, you are playing for 3 Steel Meals for featured valued guests, plus the right to force me to watch a TV episode and talk about it on a future Around the Dial. Dave is playing for 3 Steel Meals to distribute.
And Tara will pick up the poop in the backyard. Okay.
Is that what you want instead of me to write in game time in the future? Because that's fine.
No, that's fine.
All right. Dave's playing for 3 Steel Meals to distribute, plus the right to make me to supply a non-regulation game time for whenever he wants a week off. There are 18 questions and a tiebreaker if we need it and or for fun. Does anyone have any questions?
I do not.
Let us throw it to Picky to see who shall be going first.
We will start with David.
That's me.
Are you ready to play Tube Tunes T-O-O-N-S?
Yes.
All right, Dave, clip 1 is for you.
All right, here it is. You know, I collapsed the quantum tesseract.
Dad, I don't care how you made it. I want to know if Tommy's still in there.
Relax, Beth. If he is, we'll find him. He'll be the only sun-bleached skeleton with non-imaginary DNA.
I'm going to guess, I think that's Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty is correct for 2 points. Whew. Dave, for your follow-up, can you tell me which Scrubs star we heard in that clip?
Can I play the clip again?
Yes.
All right, here it is. You know, I collapsed the quantum tesseract.
Dad, I don't care how you made it. I want to know if Tommy's still in there.
Relax, Beth. If he is, we'll find him. He'll be the only sun-bleached skeleton with non-imaginary...
The actor.
Yes. It's non-regulation game time, so if you don't know an actor's name...
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
I don't need your charity. I do, but let's not do it.
You guys might both need it in the future. I don't know.
Is it Sarah? Oh, no. I don't know if it's Chalk.
Oh, you're so close.
Sarah Chalk.
Yes. Oh, I wasn't sure if it was Clark or Chalk. I just took, it was a 50-50. Okay, good.
Sarah Chalk is correct for 1 more point.
All right, okay.
So you got 3 points total, right?
Correct.
Okay, very good.
John, clip 2 is for you.
You know you can't leave the table until you finish your vegetables.
Well, then I shall sit here until one of us expires, and you've got a good 40 years on me, woman.
Sweetie, it's broccoli. It's good for you. Now open up for the airplane.
Never!
That, I believe, is Family Guy.
Family Guy is correct for 2 points. And which star of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel did we hear in that clip?
Is it Rachel Brosnahan?
No.
It's
Alex Borstein.
Alex Borstein, okay.
Still good for 2 points. Dave.
Yes.
Please play clip 3 for you.
Okay.
So, what business are you in now?
Construction.
And what sort of business are you interested in starting?
Well, we're always coming up with lots of ideas on how to make a lot of money quick.
Hey, there's always crime.
Always crime, yeah. I'm going to listen to that again, please, as he stalls for time.
So, what business are you in now?
Construction.
And what sort of business are you interested in starting?
Well, we're always coming up with lots of ideas on how to make a lot of money quick.
Hey, there's always crime.
Always crime, yeah. I actually have no idea. None. Zero.
Okay. Well, you get a hint.
Okay.
And your hint is that show stars Veep star Gary Cole.
All right. I feel like this is going to be like one of those 2019, 2020 lost shows that just disappeared into the COVID hole. I don't know.
That is Harvey Birdman, attorney at law.
Did not ring a bell.
All right. Clip four is for John.
We're back with Star Poop. Let's welcome a young actress whose first film opens next month, Valerie Fox. Oh!
The Critic?
The Critic is correct for 2 points. And which star of news radio did we hear in that clip?
John Lovitz.
John Lovitz is good for 1 more point. All right, moving on to clip five for Dave.
We're in a fight, but ultimately we're still friends, right?
No! She was your friend. Then she was your lover. Now she's your enemy.
Please stop quoting your dad's divorce lawyer commercials.
Okay, fine!
That's Big Mouth.
Big Mouth is good for 2 points. Which star of The League did we hear in that clip?
Jason Mantzoukas.
Actually, they're both in that, but I was looking for the other one. He's not a series regular, but I'll give it to you.
Yeah, I've never seen The League.
The other is now.
I'm going to take your charity in this case.
All right, clip six is for John.
They say children are a blessing, but mine are holy terrors. Oh, Doyle Harkavy knows children. Of course, his daughter jumped out a window.
Oh. I think this is probably wrong, but I'm going to guess King of the Hill.
King of the Hill is correct for 2 points.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Sure. Which star of Veronica's Closet did we hear in that clip?
I have no idea. Kirstie Alley?
No. Kathy Najimy played Peggy. All right, Dave, clip seven is for you.
Haven't really seen you since the wedding. Kind of feels like we're coming back to school after a summer vacation.
Yeah, I'll see you at the pep rally.
Hope we don't get Mrs. Kirkman for trig this year.
Yeah, well, I hope the cheerleaders don't stuff me in a locker and write virgin slut on my forehead, and then when I ask how I can be both a virgin and a slut, they make me eat a lipstick.
What is that show?
Can you listen to it again, please?
Haven't really seen you since the wedding. Kind of feels like we're coming back to school after a summer vacation.
Yeah, I'll see you at the pep rally.
Hope we don't get Mrs. Kirkman for trig this year.
Yeah, well, I hope the cheerleaders don't stuff me in a locker and write virgin slut on my forehead, and then when I ask how I can be both a virgin and a slut, they make me eat a lipstick.
Okay. I don't remember it, but because I think I recognize Will Arnett's voice, I'm just going to say BoJack Horseman.
BoJack Horseman is correct. Yeah.
Don't remember that piece of dialogue at all.
Well,
I was panicked because I heard Will Arnett and I'm like, fuck, Will Arnett has been in 20,000 animated shows. But then I figured out it is probably BoJack Horseman.
All right, which star of Glow did we hear in that clip?
Oh, fuck, what's her name?
Shit.
It's shit. Oh, no.
It's there.
Allison Brie?
Yes! Oh, okay. Good for 1 more point.
Nice pull.
I knew it was a cheese.
Clip eight is for John, and then we'll have a score break.
You're driving him stark raving mad.
What I do?
What you do? Running around all up and down this stupid blimp.
Against the rules.
Half naked, tits bouncing around like you're at a rodeo, then going back to some billionaire suite.
I was trying to stop a bomb plot.
Oh my God, there is no bomb.
More good news.
Joe Reed is smiling. This is Archer.
Archer is correct for 2 points. And which star of Arrested Development did we hear in that clip?
The late, great Jessica Walter.
Indeed, late, great. We miss her. All right, let's get those scores.
All right. Dave has 9 points. I have 10.
Oh, dang.
Brutally close game. Let's keep going.
I know you couldn't hear it, but I cracked my neck.
Oh,
that's so serious.
All right, let us hear clip 9 for Dave.
Cheap shot to the back of the head, I know. I was actually aiming for literally any other part of your body, but...
Oh, come on, Mary Berry, that pie crust was next level flaky.
You shall pay for... Are you binge-watching the Great British Bake Off in your helmet while we fight?
No, I'm savoring the Great British Bake Off, making it last. No more than 2 episodes a day. 3 tops.
Kimber wins with his ginger tart!
I need to listen to that again.
Cheap shot to the back of the head, I know. But I was actually aiming for literally any other part of your body. But...
Oh, come on, Mary Berry! That pie crust was next level flaky!
You shall pay for... Are you binge-watching the Great British Bake Off in your helmet while we fight?
No, I'm savoring the Great British Bake Off, making it last. No more than two episodes a day. Three tops.
All right, I know it's Patton Oswalt in there, and I recognize that first voice, who I assume is the series that's the first voice that this one.
Cheap shot to the back of the head.
Mm-hmm. Cheap shot to the back of the head. That's so familiar. Oh, God. It would be really bad when I figure out. Oh, who is that? Who's that for that?
It doesn't matter. That's just a guest star.
Yeah. The only thing I know is it the MODOK one?
MODOK is correct for 2 points. And that was John Hamm. Iron Man. And you already said it, but who is the King of Queens series regular we heard?
Patton Oswalt.
Correct for another
point. I didn't expect to get those points.
Oh, boy.
Nice ball again.
All right. John, please tell us what is going on in clip 10.
My video call is in like T-minus 2 minutes and I'm shortlist.
Honey, the camera's not going to see below your waist. Unless the Park League people insist on looking at your legs. And I mean, who can blame them? Give us a quick strut. One for Mama. Come on.
Oh, boy.
Want to hear that again?
Sure, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I kind of do, but we'll do it anyways.
My video call is in like T-minus 2 minutes and I'm shortlist.
Honey, the camera's not going to see below your waist. Unless the Park League people insist on looking at your legs. Then, I mean, who can blame them? Give us a quick strut. One for Mama. Come on.
I feel like I'm going to be mad.
If it helps you, John, I didn't get it on the voices at all. It was a context clue that made me arrive to what I think is the answer.
Well, I have a feeling I know what the context clue is, but, well, all right, I'll try. Great North?
No. All right, well, I'll give you your clue, John. It's a star of WandaVision, Catherine Hahn, is in it.
Yeah, no, I feel embarrassed that I don't know Catherine Hahn's full filmography, but I don't know.
That's okay, Dave. What did you think it was?
I think it's Central Park.
Central Park is correct.
Although those two shows that your guess of the right answer are related by marriage.
They sure are. Yeah. And production company, I think. Yeah. All right, clip 11 is for Dave.
Ah, man.
Oh, we're going to get in such big trouble for this.
We have to get to our stations.
What do we have bridge duty today? We're going to walk in and everyone's going to be looking at us.
No, they won't. Just chill.
Okay, we'll just explain what happened and why we're late. It'll be fine.
I think that's Star Trek Lower Decks.
Star Trek Lower Decks is correct. And which star of The Boys did we hear in that clip?
Oh, yeah. What's his first name? Last name is Quaid. First name is not Randy. Oh, I almost said Jack.
Jack is correct. That is Jack Quaid. Nice. Good job, Dave. All right, clip 12 is for John.
My mindset, it is set. Hell, they blew out 3 electric shock machines at Arkham trying to get through to me. I am done giving that clown second chances.
Is your card the 3 of Hearts?
No.
Fuck.
That was just for Dave, mostly, the joke.
Fuck. I have not gotten around to this show yet, but this time I think the context clue is determinative for me. I'm going to guess Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn is correct for 2 points. And which star of The Flight Attendant did we hear in that clip?
I'm going to guess Kaley Cuoco.
Kaley Cuoco is good for 1 point. Nice. All right, Dave.
Yes.
Please play clip 13 for you.
Hey, what's that thing?
Oh, this baby? Oh, this is a lava launcher.
Yeah, Aaron, check it out. Oh, watch out. Yeah, I mean, lately I've just been using it to defrost meat. Or fish sometimes when I'm thinking about the old cholesterol.
So I think it could do some pretty serious damage.
Oh, hell yeah. Now this thing will melt your face right off. Yeah.
I think I recognize one of those voices. John, do you want me to play it again? I'll play it again.
What's that thing?
Oh, this baby? Oh, this is a lava launcher. Yeah, Aaron, check it out. Oh, watch out. Yeah, I mean, lately I've just been using it to defrost meat. Or fish sometimes when I'm thinking about the old cholesterol.
So I think it could do some pretty serious damage.
Oh, hell yeah. Now this thing will melt your face right off. Yeah.
I think I know both of those voices. At least I'm pretty good on the first one, but I don't know what show they were in.
I will say, I'll give you the slight hint. This is moderately off model from the quiz, and I will tell you why once you guess.
Oh, I see.
Do you want the hint?
I'm thinking if I know those voices. All right, give me the hint.
That clip features Ted Lasso star Jason Sudeikis. Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't help me because I knew that part. I was going to take a guess based on past co-workers and stuff. That was that Amy Poehler show that was on for a hot second, but I don't remember the name and title of that.
Oh, that show's still on, but it's not that.
It's not that? Okay, I give up.
That is Son of Zorn.
And that's why
it's off model, because it's only semi-animated. But yes, you know the other voice is Johnny Pemberton from Superstore.
Yeah.
All right. Clip 14 is for John, and then we will do another score break.
Computer, be reasonable. Sure, men are annoying, and they wreck up whatever planet they're in charge of. But most of these men are sort of my friends. They don't deserve to die.
Perhaps men are not as evil as Femputer thinks. But they make fun women's basketball.
What? Did you explain how the women's good fundamentals make up for their inability to dunk?
Yes, they still laugh.
The man must die!
I believe this is Futurama.
Futurama is correct for 2 points. And which Married with Children star did we hear in that clip?
Ms. Katie Sagal.
That is correct as well. And Bea Arthur from the previously mentioned Golden Girls as Femputer. All right, let's get a score break. You each have 2 questions left.
Oh my God, you guys. Dave Cole has 15 points. I have 16.
All right.
If I lose, I want to ask
who knew non-regulation game time would be so tense.
All right, you each have 2 questions left. Dave, clip 15 is for you.
Right. You want to teach your daughter how to drive stick? Don't die.
Well, if you're going to use that against
me. And you know, also, didn't you lose your title of expert on driving cars when you died in a car accident?
Whoa, I told you it wasn't an accident. Someone was trying to kill me. You think I would just drive so recklessly into a ravine, leave you behind like that? I would never do that.
But who would want to kill you?
I can't know for sure. That's why I need your help.
What the hell?
Do you want the hint?
No.
You want to teach your daughter how to drive stick? Don't die.
Well, if you're going to use that against
me. And you know, also, didn't you lose your title of expert on driving cars when you died in a car accident?
Whoa. I told you it wasn't an accident. Someone was trying to kill me. You think I would just drive so recklessly into a ravine, leave you behind like that? I would never do that.
But who would want to kill you?
I can't know for sure. That's why I need your help.
Ah. I know that voice, and I think I've at least seen this pilot or something. It seems familiar.
You watched this show.
I was thrown because my first thought, it's Doom Patrol, because that sounds like Doom Patrol setup. But that's not animated. Take the hint.
The clip featured Better Call Saul star Bob Odenkirk in this adult animation show.
Yeah.
Which was called
Undone.
Undone is good for 1 point. John, clip 16.
What's going on? I'm supposed to be ahead.
It's under control. Tammy just handed us the answer. Negativity backfires, which means it also front fires. Change of strategy.
Posters on it. Everybody like bubble letters?
I don't know. They're pretty flashy.
There's no repeats, right?
No repeats. Okay. Yeah,
I know one of the voices, but I need it. Can I hear it again?
What's going on? I'm supposed to be ahead.
It's under control. Tammy just handed us the answer. Negativity backfires, which means it also front fires. Change of strategy.
Posters on it. Everybody like bubble letters?
I don't know. They're pretty flashy.
I feel like I'm really close, but...
Do you want the hint?
Sure.
That clip features Flight of the Conchord star Kristen Schaal.
Yeah, I knew that one too.
This show has already been in the game and it wasn't because you're remembering a different show that was in the game?
Does
that clear things up for you?
No, I think I get what you're saying, but yeah, no, I don't think I can pull it. Sorry.
All right, Dave, what show is that?
Sounds like Bob's Burgers.
It is Bob's Burgers.
Of course.
All right, clip 17 for Dave.
Just to confirm, we're all tied up with one question each?
We are all tied up with one question to go.
Getting my good ears on. Here we go.
Looks like we won't be getting breakfast together this morning. Bummer.
It's the White House, Mom. Kind of important?
Oh, they rebuild that thing twice a year at this point. If it's not Doc Seismic, it's the Lizard League or someone else. I doubt the president still lives there.
I'm not too late. I'm going to shower.
What the hell? Okay, I recognize the voice at the end. Play that again for Dave.
Looks like we won't be getting breakfast together this morning. Bummer.
It's the White House, Mom. Kind of important?
Oh, they rebuild that thing twice a year at this point. If it's not Doc Seismic, it's the Lizard League or someone else. I doubt the president still lives there.
I'm not too late. I'm going to shower.
Oh, got it. Okay, this is Invincible.
Invincible is correct for 2 points.
I knew it was J.K. Simmons. I was IMDBing in my head. Okay.
All right. Well, which star of Killing Eve did we hear in that clip?
Oh, no, I can't remember her name. Sandra.
Yes, you can. Sandra is correct for one more point. Mm-hmm. All right. Final clip.
I was about to say Christina Yang, which is her character, right?
Wow. I can't believe you knew that.
Why do I know that?
All right. Our last clip is for John.
All right. Good luck, Dad.
Thanks.
Guards! A weird ghost guy is attacking and complimenting me.
Shut up. Silencio.
First up, not a ghost. Ghosts are losers that got murdered. I am a demon. That's right. In fact, your personal demon. Get used to it, because you were stuck with me for all eternity.
I don't know. I don't
want to hear it again.
Any voices?
You want to hear it again? You should hear it again.
Sure,
we're here at the end of the game. We should hear it.
Yeah. Sure, why not?
Guards! A weird ghost guy is attacking and complimenting me.
Shut up. Silencio.
First up, not a ghost. Ghosts are losers that got murdered. I am a demon. That's right. In fact, your personal demon. Get used to it, because you were stuck with me for all eternity.
I think I have guessed, but yeah, that's tough.
No, I don't have it.
Okay, well, that clip features Broad City star Abby Jacobson, if that helps.
It doesn't, no.
Dave, what did you think of this?
That's the really bad series Enchantment.
It's disenchantment.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Dave would have got it right anyways.
All right, let's get those final scores.
All right.
Final score. Dave is our winner with 19.
Dave!
I was runner-up with 16.
Very Ooh. Close, hard-fought game. Do we want to play the tiebreaker for one more Steel Meal?
You know we
do. Of course.
Shout it out.
Remember, this film is my heart. Yeah, I want your voice to weep with honesty and truth and all that is real in this world. And go!
There's nothing in the rule book that says a giraffe can't play football.
Clone High is correct. Good job.
I needed the giraffe to complete that one.
Yeah.
Well fought. Well fought. Good game, Tara.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was fun.
Dave!
Dave.
Whew. All right, guys. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. The Netflix animated comedy Inside Job conspired to keep you unentertained before we went around the dial with stops at Succession, You, We're Here, and... Tara explained why she is not a TV crackpot, while Erica booked Brooklyn Nine-Nine's Casecation for the no-neck. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and I, David T. Cole, was the winner of this week's Game Time from Tara. Next up on EEHG with John Ramos, it's clothing time. And then right here on Prime next week, it's the fall farcening. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara.
You want to spend all that water park money on a kid?
John Ramos.
Casecation is not what I wanted.
And the absent Sarah D. Bunting. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Point to Amy.
That's not your call to make, Peralta. Point to Amy.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.